Good evening. I'm Frank Kaufman. I'm the president of the 12 Gates Foundation, and I'm very happy this evening to have the opportunity to interview Mr. Solala Towler. Mr. Towler was editor and publisher of the spiritual and scholarly journal The Empty Vessel, the Journal of Taoist Philosophy and Practice. He did this for 25 years. Mr. Towler has had 14 books published, including Inner Chapters of Chuangzi, The Tao of Intimacy and Ecstasy, : The Promise of Spiritual Union, also Tales from the Tao, and Practicing the Tao, Te Ching, 81 Steps on the Way. Mr. Towler's work has been translated into Dutch, French, Italian, and Spanish. He is a founding board member of the National Qigong Association, as well as its past president. Mr. Towler has taught Qigong and Taoist meditation for over 30 years and leads tours to visit Taoist temples in the sacred mountains of China. Solala also leads Taoist tea ceremonies and is also author of the books Cha Dao, The Way of Tea, Tea as a Way of Life, and Tea Mind, Tea Heart. Mr. Solala Towler is also a musician of sacred music. He has recorded 4 CDs of meditation and relaxation music. He does this using large Tibetan bowls, flutes, harmonic overtone singing, and group chant. To learn more about the work of Solala, both his music, his teachings, his meditation practices, please visit his site, AbodeTao, AbodeTao.com. That link is also available in the notes. It's a treasure trove of valuable information of authentic Taoist way for both novice and longtime practitioners. So please join me to welcome to this evening's interview, Mr. Solala Towler. Hi, Solala.
Hello.
This is great. Thanks for joining us. Look forward to spending some time. And thank you for making the time to be with us. This is great.
My pleasure.
Good. What's making me so excited is that that Taoism, I think, is kind of, everybody thinks they know a little bit about it. It has a kind of a natural appeal or popularity here, but I bet when pressed, I bet a lot of Americans or a lot of people would, as soon as we're pressed, we wouldn't know enough. We'd say, and so you've devoted so much of your life, your biography says, 30 years in this dedication. And so we really have a chance here to get some of the basics down and hear some of the deeper insights to the tradition. So that's especially why I'm very grateful that you've granted us your time here today.
Sure.
One of the things that happened in the West back in the kind of time of awakening, maybe 60s, 50s, not 50s, like 60s, 70s or so, there were a lot of Western people in all kinds of searches, and many ended up in various Asian traditions, maybe Buddhism, Hinduism, and so I'm wondering if you yourself had a period of seeking or searching, or if there's anything interesting about your own kind of course and biography before you came to Taoism as your way, and what how did that happen? How did this become the place you settled?
Good question. I am a child of the 60s, and I grew up in a little blue collar working class town in Massachusetts called Lawrence, Massachusetts. I was in the library one day when I was in high school, and I found a book by, I was a Roman Catholic French Canadian working class guy in Lawrence, and the next town over was Lowell, And there was another guy who was a Roman Catholic French Canadian blue collar writer named Jack Kerouac.
Really?
Yes. And so I found this book called Dharma Bums, and it was about his travels with, especially with his friend Gary Snyder, who he calls Jaffe Ryder in his book.
Right.
And it was my first exposure to Buddhism. I was raised a Roman Catholic, and which I did not. And when I was growing up, the mass was all still in Latin, and we had to dress up, and it was just awful. I hated it. So I discovered Buddhism. Wow, what's Buddhism? And so I got some more books out of the library about Buddhism, and I started studying that. And when I graduated high school in 1968, I moved from Lawrence to Boston, ostensibly to go to school there, to college. I was the first person in my whole family to ever go to college. My dad didn't even graduate high school. And but I wanted to be a writer, and I realized pretty quickly that I wasn't going to learn how to be a writer by going to college, at least not in 1968. And there was a lot more interesting things happening in the streets and the parks in 1968. So
Right.
I had grown up very neurotic, had very few friends, never went on a date, didn't have a girlfriend, didn't go to the prom. My picture was not in the yearbook. I was really like a square peg trying to fit into the round hole, and it just didn't work. And so I started smoking a lot of weed and taking LSD, and it really opened a lot of doors for me. And once, about 1969, I realized that it opened doors, but it was up to me to go through the doors. So I stopped all psychedelics in 1969 when I was 19 and started studying yoga and meditation, because there wasn't very any Buddhists that I could find, or certainly no Taoists in Boston in 1969. So I worked with that for quite a while, and it was later, years later, I was studying Zen Buddhism, and I was sitting with a master here in Eugene, Oregon. But there was something about, especially Japanese Zen, there's this kind of rigidity about it that I didn't like. And I moved to Portland, and part of the thing was I got very ill, and I was very ill for about 10 years until I was totally bedridden. And Chinese herbs was the only thing that were helpful. And so I started wondering, what's the philosophy behind Chinese medicine? And that led me to Taoism. And I
I
started studying
see.
Lao Tzu. And one day I was in a bookstore in Portland, and I was in the used book section, and I found a book by a guy named Ni Hua Qing, Taoist Master. And so I took that home, and that opened all those doors that I was trying to go through in 1969. I finally was able to go through about 1990 or late 80s. And I discovered this teacher, Hua Ching Ni, who I've stayed with ever since then. He is like 100 years old now, and he's totally retired, and he lives in California, and I haven't seen him in years, but he's written a lot of books, about 40 books. And so I still go back to those books. And meanwhile, I've studied Qigong and Tai Chi with a lot of teachers in the United States. And I've also been to China 9 times and studied over there. So it's still, an ongoing journey. Tao means the way, but Tao is, besides being a noun, it's also a verb. So it's the way, and it's also learning and following the way.
So, wow, that's remarkable. So it sounded like your period of experimentation and the like was just a year or so in Boston. Okay. And then how did you get from Boston out to Eugene?
Oh,
What was the
I traveled all over the country. I was a professional hitchhiker and
Okay.
lived all over the country, down in Georgia, New Mexico, Colorado, everywhere. And I came to Eugene, Oregon, to visit some friends and just fell in love with this area. And
Okay.
so I've lived here, but then I got married and I moved way out to the country, and we did the whole country, dropped out. We lived in a school bus with no electricity, no running water, no bathroom. I had three children. Both, one was already there when I got married, and the other two were born at home. But I've always been drawn to Eastern mysticism for some reason. My friend Zhong Liang Al Huang tells me I have an Asian soul.
Maybe so. That sounds like likely.
I think so.
Yeah. So when you became ill, was it you were already married when?
Yeah, that, yeah.
Okay. And how was it? Was it just by the constant search for a solution that you ended up trying the Chinese medicines? Or
yes.
How did that?
Yes, because okay. I had what they call chronic fatigue syndrome.
Okay.
And in Western medicine, there's no cure. There's not even really any treatment for it. They think it's some sort of autoimmune disease. And in Chinese medicine, it makes perfect sense if you look at it from a Chinese medicine perspective. But at Western medicine, they have no idea. So Chinese herbs got me out of bed, and then Qigong is what cured me.
Very good. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a remarkable journey. And so you, for a period of time, you raised your family in this mm-hmm. in this radical commitment to kind of non-modern style.
Yeah. Yes.
You said not even electricity?
Or? No electricity, no running water, no bathroom.
Amazing.
School so bus you in just... the woods. But it was idyllic because we were way out in the forest and we lived in a little valley with a whole bunch of alternative people. And we buried people on their own land when they died. We had children at home. We did a lot of sweat lodge with Native American teachers. And there was a really strong community there. So it was a beautiful time. But eventually my kids got old enough to go to school and there weren't schools out there. So we moved into Eugene.
Okay, so already by, they're fairly young, I would guess, when they're mm-hmm. trying to go to school, right?
Yeah, but by the time of grammar school, by first grade.
That's fantastic. You said three children. One was your wife's own by the time you mm-hmm. married, prior to marriage. And then do they have a resonance with Asian spirituality?
No,
or spirituality person?
Not at all.
Yeah,
no, isn't none of them that do. And I've been divorced from their mom for about 15 years.
I see.
And so none of them do, but the thing I like is that they're all good people. Mm-hmm. They treat they all have great partnerships. They all have children now. And they're the alpha person in whatever group they're in. So they're very kind and open-minded people, but they're not, I'm a musician. They're not musicians. Mm-hmm. And they're not drawn to this stuff, but
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my partner, Shanti, she's not a Taoist either, but she's a very spiritual person and she works with, she does spiritual practice every day.
I see. Now your name is Solala. Was
yes.
this was inherited at a certain part of your journey?
Yes. Or? About 40 something years ago. It's been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a spiritual name that was just an inspiration.
Oh.
It wasn't given to me by any teacher. So it's not, I always say it's not connected to any specific religion or political party.
Okay.
Now in China, my Chinese friends call me Tzu Le Le, which mm-hmm. means comfortable, easygoing, happy, happy.
How interesting is that?
Isn't that great?
So in a way, maybe it was given you. Maybe it was given.
Oh, it was definitely given to me, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Because isn't that interesting that it has a semantic resonance between the Western,
yeah.
yet it has almost an identical resonance with its semantics in the Chinese language.
Su-la-la. Yeah.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, so some of my Chinese friends call me that.
Isn't that beautiful? and you said your partner now, her name is Shanti.
Shanti. Yeah, she's a Western woman, but her name, she took on a spiritual name of Shanti some years ago.
And was that given her?
No, she took that on herself.
Okay, and I'm familiar with the close of Hindu chanting.
Right.
And so you say, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Yes.
Is it peace?
Yes.
The name means
Sanskrit for peace.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, it's must be a tremendous household, and her practice is what do you call it? Is
well,
her
right
practice...
now she works pretty extensively with the Course in Miracles.
I see. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Now, if I recall, the Course of Miracles is meant to have been inherited from a Earth transcendent knowledge source, right? It's either angels or something.
They say it's sort of like a channeled material from the spirit of Jesus.
Oh, I didn't know it was from the spirit of Jesus.
So it's very Western oriented. And so she's not as drawn to the Eastern stuff as I am.
Right. And I think that you pursue a more purely, you're trying to find kind of established roots. Like I know I've studied a bit about your writing and from your writing and watched your studies, in which you're very dedicated to the purity of the original roots or something like that. You're not that inventive. It's like the magic comes in matching the pure origin points, not in adding to or riffing off of or something.
Yes. You know, I sometimes get irritated on Facebook. People constantly put these quotes, their so-called quotes from Tao Te Ching, but they're just this sort of made-up New Age blah, blah stuff, which is nice thoughts, but they have nothing to do with Taoism or Lao Tzu, but they all claim it's from Lao Tzu, but it's not. And sometimes I point it out, sometimes I just let it go. It's because, like we were talking earlier, you know, Buddhism is very well known in this country now. It's been here for quite some time. Hinduism also, Sufism, but Taoism has not really made a lot of inroads to Western culture, especially in this country. So most people really don't know much of anything about Taoism. So they have no way of judging what's something real from tradition or not.
Right.
And but in my writing and in my teaching, my goal is to make it useful for people in their modern lives today in the West. We don't need to become pseudo-Chinese because Tao is universal. And the teachings of Tao are universal, really.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. There's a certain commitment to the language, because that's the original carrier. It's the best expression so far. But I like that, where you say we don't need to become pseudo-Chinese. The language is important, but the imitation of some way of standing or holding one's hand, well, of course, in the practice it's needed, but not in how we, at the grocery store, so, you know, it's trying to act like a Chinese person.
Yeah, I mean, and we do the practices, you know, the very important thing about Taoism is it's something, and this even goes back to Lao Tzu's book, it's not something to just understand intellectually, and it's why we do these practices of meditation, Tai Chi, Qigong, so that you can embody the teachings in your body, not just in your mind.
Yes.
So
yes,
that's an important part of Taoism. Sometimes I'll see books by scholars or sinologists who can read and write fluent Chinese, but they mistranslate things because they've never done any of the actual practices.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, because I've had a life among religions, and you know, I have a practice, and the embodiment is what reveals the essential meaning, and ultimately, of course, it ends up inexpressible in each way. But still, it's not, you don't give up because of that. You still endeavor to communicate. You mentioned just now Qigong. I had some questions prepared, but I'd rather just follow as we're going here.
Sure.
You mentioned Qigong and Tai Chi.
Yes.
These are both physical practices, correct? Am I correct?
Physical, mental, and spiritual practices.
Very good. And are these practices tied to Taoism per se, or? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Very much so. In my book that I sent you, practicing the Tao Te Ching, my goal with that again was for it to be useful. And it's not a book to just sit down and read. I present the verses from Lao Tzu, and I have a commentary explaining what they mean. And then I have a practice for every chapter. Very simple Qigong, meditation, lifestyle practice, because people think of Tao Te Ching as a book of philosophy, or sometimes in modern China, it's thought of as a book of political writing. But it's in the Taoist tradition, it's what we call a manual for self-cultivation. So there are actually practices in the book if you know how to read it from a Taoist perspective.
So, I hope our listeners do turn to your book and see what you're talking about. Every of the 81 chapters or sections, there is the original text. There is an interpretive expression of its inner meaning or its meaning, and then there is a practice in which we can. It's like very technical. Hold your hands this way. Hold your head this way. It's
Breathe
an
into this
exact
area.
right, and that connection of the exact practice that you associated with that exact one of the 81 of the Tao Te Ching writings. The Tao Te Ching is 81 sections of writing,
It's
correct?
this magical number, 9 times 9.
Yes.
Because in Taoism, we use the number three, like some other spiritual traditions use. So we think of three: mind, body, spirit, earth, human, heaven, and what we call the three treasures, Jing, Qi, Shen. So when we do Qigong, we do things in threes or multiples of threes, and Tao Te Ching is 9 times 9. So
Yes.
there's a very specific reason it has that many chapters.
Very good. And this was exactly what Master Lao Tzu, this is exactly what he sat down that night and produced, right? These
Well,
81,
that's the story, you know.
the story, right? It's a 2,500-year-old story. Yeah, go ahead.
Scholars, especially in the West, say, oh, there really was never a guy named Lao Tzu, and somebody, a group of people wrote this at different times. But in China, the tradition is written by this one guy, and Lao Tzu, interestingly enough, is not his actual name. Lao Tzu, Lao means old, and Tzu means master, so old master. But also, I think very interesting, the character Tzu can also mean child. So sometimes you'll see his name translated as the old child or the old boy.
Very okay. Now, when you were mentioning various threes, you gave a three that was three Chinese words. What was that? Which one
Jing,
was?
Qi, Shen.
What are those?
Jing is the energy that we receive from our parents at conception.
And it's what is it again, please? Qi?
Jing, Jing.
The energy we receive from our parents at
Yes,
conception.
and it has to do with our physical body, has to do with our sexual energy, and it is we have a finite amount of it. So as we age, we use it up. And there's a whole subject we don't have time to go into today, but Taoist sexual yoga, where males lose Jing on ejaculation. So males age faster than women. And if you go to any retirement center, there's 2/3 of the people there are women, very less few men. So there's a whole thing in Taoist sexual yoga, how to retain that energy and how to circulate it and all that kind of stuff. So that's Jing. And then Qi is vital life force. Everything that is alive has qi, humans, animals, plants, rivers, mountains. And Shen is spiritual energy. So the
I
mystical
see.
quest in Taoism, what we call neidan or internal alchemy, is to transform the jing, the sort of really very physical kind of energy, and transform that more into qi. And then transform that qi into spiritual energy, and then transform that one more time back to Tao, or what we call Wu Ji, the primordial. So there are very specific practices on how to do
Very good. I get it. I mean, I'm getting it. And
that.
now in your book, the give me the name again. It's the 81. What's it
Practicing
called?
the Tao Te Ching, 81 steps on the way.
Thank you. Practicing the Tao Te Ching. There's there's a practice with each of the 81 steps.
Yes.
Was that always there? Did you select what practice should go there? Or how did those?
I'm the one who came up. This is the only book that I'm aware of in English or even Chinese that has those practices. That's what got my publisher excited about it when I called them and told them what I wanted to do. So as I said, some of them were drawn directly from the chapter from Lao Tzu, and other ones are more from a Taoist tradition that are more inspired by that chapter.
So some of the practices themselves, they're from the chapter, meaning what? You spotted them in there?
Some of the chapters, you know, talk about ways of doing meditation, of using these principles like Wu-Wei, of not forcing, not overdoing. Sometimes you can read, he's talking about a specific kind of Qigong practice. If you read it from a Taoist perspective. Mm-hmm. So I brought those out and then giving more specific instructions about it. So modern people can understand what it is and do it very easily. I teach a class, a weekly Zoom class, and we're going through the chapters and I'm leading them in the practices and everything. We do that. I've been doing that for about a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure to get anything that any of our listeners can need to links and websites.
It's basically my website.
Yeah. Oh, they can find everything right they need. Okay.
Yeah.
And what was I going to say? Was any of the application of the particular practices to a chapter of the Tao Te Ching?
Yes.
Was that from inspiration? Was that from on high? Did you get that unique?
No. It's because I've been studying this for so long. Mm-hmm. I've been studying this for 30 years, and I've studied with lots of teachers, and I'm very familiar with Qigong practices and Taoist meditation practices.
Okay.
So I know how to read it. And of course, I've read many, many versions of Tao Te Ching.
Okay. Very good. So this was the systematization or the rendering of the knowledge you've gained over your years of study and practice.
Yes.
Okay. And now, as I'm sure the listeners will have caught by now, that when you use Chinese language, you speak it with Chinese intonation or proper pronunciation.
If you can.
Right. It's notoriously difficult.
It is.
And so when you, like most people, like any other guy walking down the street, you'll say the Tao Te Ching. This is the normal way people.
Yeah,
but you make an effort to render it in more faithfully to the proper pronunciation of it, which has both the te is more with a D sound, de, and it's kind of an intonation up, I hear.
Down. Dao, and then de, up.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
And then jing, straight across.
Yeah, Tao Te Ching. Tao Te Ching. Okay.
Yeah.
My question is, have you studied Chinese yourself? I mean, could, if you weren't even interested in spirituality, would you be able to speak with a Chinese person and read a paper?
I can speak a little conversational. I can say, which means I'm sorry, my Chinese is very bad. Mm-hmm. I can speak a little, but I started studying Chinese way too late. I wish I had started in my 20s or 30s even. Mm-hmm. So I can read a little pinyin. Pinyin is like the using Chinese words instead of characters written it in English letters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's confusing because up until fairly recently, Western scholars use, there's about four systems, but the main one was called Wade-Giles. And we see the word Tao, T-A-O. So, of course, if you didn't know any better, you would think it was Tao Te Ching.
Right.
Now, we use a system called Pinyin, and it's spelled D-A-O-D-E-J-I-N-G. Mm.
I see.
But my publisher wouldn't let me do that because they said, well, most people are used to singing in this other way. We don't want to confuse people.
Yeah, I get that. It's
So, you know, of
interesting.
course, people, if you don't know any better, of course you're going to mispronounce all the words because, you know, Lao Tzu, and in pinyin it's LAOZI, Lao Tzu.
Oh,
And
I
even
see.
the title of the book, Tao is, you know, the way, all that is, everything that creates and sustains life in the universe. De is often mistranslated as morality. Morality more from a Confucian being a good person, but in Taoism, de means spiritual power or spiritual potency,
I
which is
see.
very different. Then Jing just means classic book.
I see. I see.
Yeah,
So
like the I Ching.
Jing is almost like scripture, it sounds
Yeah,
like.
it means classic book or scripture, like I Ching or I Ching, as people, of course, think that's how you say it. And I Ching is the book of changes, or you could
So
say the book of transformations.
very good. And you saw, 'cause from what I sent you, that I wanted to touch on that a bit. The I Ching, can you give us a little bit of timeline for these classic texts? Because I think many Westerners will at least by sound or name or have heard of these two books, but maybe not know which came first or how they're related or.
Well, I Ching is very old. I Ching's 5 to 6,000 years old, so it goes way older than Tao Te Ching. And I Ching was used by Confucians as well as Taoists. Matter of fact, Confucius used the term Tao in his books also,
I
but he
see.
had a little bit different understanding of what he meant by Tao. And
All
it's also used in Chan Buddhism, which is you know, where we get Zen. Mahayana Buddhism came from India to
Yeah.
China and kind of got mixed up a lot with Taoism and took on a lot of Taoist aspects
I
and
see.
became what they call Chan Buddhism. And then that moved to Japan, where the word for Chan or meditation is Zen.
Oh, I see. So that word Chan or Zen simply means meditation.
But
I
it, you know, it's
see.
about a whole, it's a very different kind of Buddhism than Mahayana Buddhism from India.
So that's what I wanted to do a little bit with you now, if you don't mind, on timeline. So you're talking about a book called the I Ching, or I'll try my best to sound correct. I Ching. Right, it's 5 to 6,000 years old. What is that? What is that that is still around for 6,000 years?
Well, you know, it started out with just a unbroken line and a broken line. And then many years went by, and then somebody started putting them together into trigrams, three of them. And then many years went by, and, you know, the Duke of Zhou and various people came, put two of those together and became hexagrams. And then there's a whole section that Gongfutsa or Confucius wrote a commentary on it. So it's kind of interesting because it's been an evolving book over thousands of years. And what I grew up with in the 60s, what many people in the West grew up with, was the wage, I mean, the Wilhelm Baines version, which I'm not crazy about because it's more of a German translation of a Confucian version of the book. And I use one by my teacher, Hua Qingni, and it's a very Taoist view. And it's basically whatever hexagram you get, you know, there's positive ones and not so positive ones. There's some like the abyss that you're in a big hole. And it's, so he explains how can you use whatever situation you're in your life for your spiritual cultivation. No matter how positive or negative it seems. And of course, it's the book of changes, the book of transformation. So it never st you, we never stay in one place. But if we're in a place, sometimes I do readings for people a lot with the I Ching, and I say, it's sort of like the great wheel of life. And where are you right now on this wheel of life? Is this a place where you have a lot of support from the spiritual realm? You know, where you can take on new projects and move forward in new adventures, or you want a place where you really don't have that support, and it's a better time to just be quiet, be still, and gather your energy so that when things do change, then you can move forward. Because otherwise, you might overstep or overextend yourself and run into trouble, or you feel you come up against a obstruction. And part of the Taoist thing about watercourse way is you come up against an obstruction, and to just, instead of trying to bash your way through it, crash your way through it, it's time to just relax, be still, wait till the energy rises naturally, and the obstruction breaks up of itself.
Yes. Yes. So the I Ching is used for to help the person living their life recognize what forces are operative, or what's the nature of the energy in which we carry out our affairs, and that will guide us to act it's a good time for acting, a good time for still, things like that. Correct?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So it's very practical.
Yes. And from whence draws, I have a friend or a young colleague, a young acquaintance of mine, who's a very skilled astrologer. And much of how she reports about the nature of astrological movement is similar to that. Now's a good time for this. Now, mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm. In 4 days, it'll be, the energies will have shifted. Mm-hmm. Whence the I Ching, why does the I Ching also know this? Where does it get its, where does it get its rootedness in what's true about the nature of the energetic?
Well, you know, it's a tricky thing to try to explain, but in my teacher's book, Huaqing Ni's book, it's a huge book of about 500 pages. And the first third is explaining how the cosmology works. So it's cosmological, like astrology. Astrology, of course, is very popular in China. And actually, Chinese medicine, what we think of as Chinese medicine now, acupuncture, herbs, traditionally, in classical Chinese medicine, it had branches like astrology, feng shui, meditation, herbalism, qigong. All these were part of Chinese medicine. And then in the communist era, they decided to take all the mystical, spiritual, what they called supernatural elements out of Chinese medicine and dropped a lot of that stuff and only kept acupuncture and herbs.
I see.
There are practitioners in the West. There are some, not many, who have gone back and studied a lot of the original stuff. Because a lot of things we think of as just Chinese culture, you know, like astrology, feng shui, poetry, calligraphy, painting, food combining, qigong, you know, all these things all come from Taoism.
I see.
Even in China, they don't think, oh, this is a Taoist thing. It's just, this is a Chinese thing. This is what we do. We do these kinds of things. We like these paintings, you know, and calligraphy and things like that. And feng shui, you're going to buy a house or you're going to open a business, you go talk to the feng shui master to see if it's the right place for you. And they don't think of it as a Taoist thing. It's just a Chinese thing to them.
I'll continue. I don't want to sound pretentious. I'll continue my novice attempt at sounding correct. So Confucius, I'll call him Confucius. Both Confucius and Lao Tzu drew their interpretation of cosmic reality from the I Ching.
Yes.
And were they vying interpretations, or were they simply contemporaneous?
They, you know, there's a story in the Chuangzi, which is the next big important book after Tao Te Ching, and in there he talks about Confucius and Lao Tzu have a meeting, and Confucius goes to visit Lao Tzu, and he's asking him for advice, and Lao Tzu is telling him, you're just wrapped up in these old, because Confucius was very invested in the old traditions, the old ceremonies. This is what we have to go back to. We have to do these rituals. And he was saying, you're just sort of basing all your philosophies and practices on the dead bones of ancient people. And you know, it's like the you need to get in step with Tao, with what's really going on, and to move forward. And supposedly Confucius went back and told his students that he's seen various kinds of animals, but he said, today I met a real dragon. But what's important to know about the Tao Te Ching is that many times in that book, he talks about the ancient sages, the ancient teachers. So 2,500 years ago, he's talking about ancient teachers who were ancient then. And a lot of these ideas that are in the Tao Te Ching are hundreds, if not thousands of years already. And some of them go back to what we call the Wu, the shamans in China, the Wu shamans, which were most of which were women. And it comes from a oral tradition. So, you know, if many what we call tribal or primal cultures in the planet are oral traditions. And this idea, when the anthropologists would come and interview them and they'd ask them the stories and they would write them down, and people were like, no, we don't believe in that way. Once you write the story down, it's stuck in this box and it never changes. And the stories that we've been telling for many, many generations change depending on where the audience, the time of year, who's telling it, who the people they're telling it to. And so, you know, the famous story of Tao Te Ching is that he was, you know, dropping out. He had a really cushy job in the capital, taking care of the imperial library. So he was a very educated man. And he saw that China was entering what historians call the Warring States period, sort of much like we're in today. And he saw society was really falling apart and he didn't want any part of it. And so he decided to leave. And he went off to the wilderness, and he was on the last frontier of China. And the gatekeeper there, who had studied, either studied with him or knew of him or was an astrologer. And the story is that he saw a purple cloud coming toward him, and he knew some high master was coming, and Lao Tzu showed up. And so this guy, Yin Shi, asked him and then finally begged him to write some of his teachings down, and Lao Tzu didn't want to write them down because he didn't want to imprison them. The very first line of the book says the Tao that can be spoken or written about or defined in words is not the real Tao. But somehow, fortunately for us, Yin Shi prevailed upon Lao Tzu to write this book. So the teachings in Tao Te Ching go back much further than 2,500 years is what I'm trying to say. And a lot of people don't know that.
Right. And so here you have the period of the Warring States. It's a period of rampant cultural and moral decline. There's no good left in the piece you sent me earlier. Even the simple person was already losing the common decency and dignity that like you said in the piece I read from you. Even the farmers were no longer could be relied upon. Mm-hmm. To have an intuition about what's naturally good. And they're kind of the last guardian, the last frontier of people related to where basic truth is revealed. Mm-hmm. You work hard, you're farm, and so on. And so Confucius and Lao Tzu were contemporaries in this very same period of imperial development, right? Of the development of... And it seems to me from a lay person or outsider that Confucius or Confucius was trying to put things in order, give as much account of how to order this, to try to provide correctives, to kind of put the brakes on and stop the plummet or decline of the world around him.
Yeah. And
is there any truth to that? Or
well, you know, what a lot of people don't know is that Confucius was very, what's the word? He did not do well. He was not popular in his time. He constantly traveled to different kingdoms to try to get the rulers there to follow his philosophy. And he was not very successful at all. It wasn't until hundreds of years, if not thousands of years later, that he became popular. So he was sort of trudging around the country, you know, trying to tell people we need to go back to
anybody
their
who would
rituals.
Listen, right? Right.
Yeah, especially, you know, of course, rulers he tried. And some of them would listen to him, but then they would get bored by him. And he was never very successful in his lifetime. And so in Zhuangzi, the book Zhuangzi, there's a lot of stuff sort of making fun of the Confucians. And even a little bit in the Tao Te Ching, too. Because the Tao Te Ching makes a big deal about the difference between head knowledge and belly knowledge.
Yes.
And just learning with intellectual knowledge is not as important as really knowing things in your heart or in your gut. Gut knowledge is the most important.
Yeah. So these seem like just different personalities or different gifts or different giftedness and perhaps...
kind of really different approaches.
Yes.
Yeah. Because lots of the people that were following Lao Tzu and Zhuangzi, historically in China, especially in ancient times, the Taoists, the thing was eventually when Confucian's teachings got popular, the rulers liked it because Confucianism was a lot about knowing your place in society and staying there.
Right.
And Taoism was about being free, especially in the Zhuangzi. You see, it's all about being free. And they were the artists and the, you know, the wild people. And the rulers, of course, weren't as crazy about those people because they couldn't control them as well.
Now, can you just say a word? You've mentioned it a few times. Zhuangzi.
Yeah, or Zhuangzi, you know, it's spelled. He was a couple hundred years after Lao Tzu. He's the most important of the second ancient teachers. And his book, he was a really radical free thinker. And his book has a lot of stories, a lot of humor, a lot of paradox. It's a lot of fun. The Zhuangzi is a lot of fun.
Zhuangzi. And then another name or sound that one might hear is Zhuangzi. That's different, is it? Or is that...
What was the last one you said?
Chuang, it's a writer who comes many, some hundreds of years later in the Taoist tradition.
Yeah, I think that's the same one I'm saying.
Okay, that's Zhuangzi the one you're
referring to.
Okay, very good. Yeah. Okay, very good. And he's the one who brings a lot of the kind of dramatic enchantment forward with his stories. And very good. Okay.
Yeah, and he's a lot more radical thinker than Lao Tzu.
Than Lao Tzu.
Yeah.
Now, this might be sound. I don't want to be rude here, but just very thinking a little bit is here. You have a country in decline. You have a person with a position, and the response to it is to leave, and it's leave his students and as I was reading it, you know, there's nothing. You know, there's nothing more. There's something infinitely enchanting about this infinitely wise soul just kind of lumbering along on an ox. You know, even the paintings are to show this. Anyway, I've said it. But as I'm reading it, I'm wondering, really, is that what you're going to do? Is just leave or something like that?
Yeah, I think that he, you know, he had that cushy job in the capital, and I'm sure he had students there. But he realized that things were really falling apart, and people were not going to honor what he was teaching.
It was like simply, I've tried everything possible. Yeah. It's basically that. Is that?
Well, you know, there's a big hermit tradition in Taoism too. Okay, a lot of people just went to the mountains. You know, part of it is to drop out of society. Part of it is when I was talking about the Tao Te, the spiritual potency. It's something that you can create or cultivate in yourself, but it's also in nature, especially mountains or by rivers or something, it's considered that there is a natural form of Te there that you can pick up on. So there's a wonderful book by a guy named Bill Porter called Road to Heaven. And it was written some 20 years or so ago. And he traveled all around China, discovering and interviewing hermits who lived in the mountains in China, Buddhist and Taoist. It's a really fun book.
And it's okay, I'll Road get it from you, and it'll be in the notes as well. Yeah. So it's Bill Porter, and the name of it is
Road to Heaven.
Road to Heaven. And this is a Western writer who spent time in China.
Yeah, he speaks and writes fluent Chinese. He does a lot of translations of Buddhist texts and Chinese poetry also. His pen name when he's doing that stuff is Red Pine. And then when he writes his travel books, he goes by the name Bill Porter. He lives up in Washington.
I see.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Then Huaqing Ni, you know, I want to tell people, you know, this is the guy, Huaqing Ni, Huaqing, and then Ni.
Yes.
And I have some of his books on my website. And I mentioned when I first found his book, it was this book by Ni Huaqing, because in China they put their last name first. Ni Huaqing, yes. Taoist master. And then a few years later, he changed his byline to Huaqing Ni, teacher of natural spiritual truth, something like that. And then a little while later, he changed his byline to just Huaqing Ni. So he kind of demoted himself, which is the opposite thing that people in the West do. People studied a little Qigong. They do Qigong 5 or 10 years. They think suddenly they're calling themselves master so-and-so or even grandmaster so-and-so. You know, and in China, you don't call yourself a master unless you've been given that by your teacher or you embody the teachings in your very being. So much so that you can be called a master.
Right. And it's something I think you never call yourself. I mean, you barely allow it to be said, but it's not on your business.
No. And the thing about it in the West is it's a marketing thing. you call yourself master. Yeah. They say, well, he can charge more money. He's a master.
Maybe that's why they're called a MasterCard.
Maybe. And now, you know, traditionally in China, if you meet a real Taoist master, you'll say, oh, I hear you are a master. You're an expert at this or that. And if they're the real deal, they'll say, well, I know a little. They will never say, well, yes, I am a master. Yes, I do know everything about this. You know, that's how you tell if it's the real deal or not.
It should be so obvious even in the early stages of self-development.
But people in the West don't know. It's like a lot of people, there was a lot of hanky-panky that went on with teachers from India in the 60s and 70s.
Right, I remember.
Because people, they have no way of testing. You know, so-and-so, Swami so-and-so, they're from India. They must know everything. And they're asking me to do some really weird things. But, you know, they know better than me what I need to do. And so there was a lot of strange things that went on. And people say, oh, so-and-so from China, they may not know that much. They come to America, they call themselves Master So-and-so, and they can charge a lot of money for their books and workshops and things because people in the West are not educated.
Mm.
Yeah, of course not.
Well, I think that's the beauty of teaching a way or teaching a practice. And then the practice itself starts to provide the student with the capacity to sense the quality of the teaching there because they're applying it themselves.
That's exactly right. I tell people, like a Qigong practice, for instance, you learn it from a teacher, but after you're doing it for quite a while, the practice itself becomes your teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And just what you were saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's an exciting beauty of a tradition where you have your teacher and you don't, almost at one and the same time, right? Because the practice, like you said, we're just repeating each other now. The practice is the highest educator, is the practice itself.
But you have to really, you know, dedicate yourself to it. They're studying Tai Chi or Qigong. They go to a weekly class and they only do it when they're in the class once a week. You know, it doesn't really work for you that way. You really have to commit yourself. I'm very fortunate. I bought a house here in Eugene, Oregon that had a temple in the backyard. It's an 8-sided building with a little pagoda roof. And it was built as a Sufi temple. It's very small. So it's a round room and it's my temple that I get to go out in every day to do my practices in. And I do I work a lot with tea, with Kung Fu tea. Tea is meditation.
Yeah.
And I do tea ceremonies in there. Not right now, of course, but, and we do, I do classes in there and conferences. I mean, I have a big set of Tibetan bowls that I use, and I do concerts, and we do kirtan concerts and things. So we're not doing it right now. And the summer was great because we could invite people over for tea, do tea ceremony out in the yard. I have a huge yard. So right now it's
Nice.
all on Zoom.
Right. It's pray that this is lifted and that we can be back in each other's
Oh yeah, it will.
presence.
It will. I
Yeah.
mean, you have to, anyone who's a student of history knows that dynasties come and go. You know, some of the most amazing civilizations in the world, you know, in ancient Egypt and Mesopotamia and all these, like, amazingly in South America, you know, came and went. You know,
Yeah.
our dynasty and civilization will change at some point, and maybe they'll think about, gee, remember back in the 2000s, people still had to, like, talk on phones. They couldn't just communicate through the air. Or, you know, people were eating these things that weren't even food. They just ate them, packaging, and they were weird colors and weird things. And there were actually things built in them to cause you to become addicted to them so you would buy more of them.
Right. Isn't that right? Isn't that right? So Lala, you know, I think we've gotten less than one stripe down in this little plan of mine, and not surprising to me at all. But if with your blessings, I hope that we can continue once or twice more, so that
Sure, that'd be
there's
great.
so much more to
Yeah.
learn. And but this has been tremendous. I think I'm very proud and happy to have this recording here
Yes, well,
for
I'm happy
our
to do it.
listeners.
I'm happy to do it. And let me just say the name of my website, which you can find my books, watching these books, my classes. And it's very simple. It's www.abode, like home,
Yes.
ABODE, and then Tao
Yes.
spelled with a T. So ABODETAO.com.
Beautiful,
And there's
beautiful.
a lot of free articles, music, video, a lot of free stuff on there too. So if people want to learn a little more, there's a lot of stuff on there.
That's great. And people can relax if they're listening live, because we'll have all those links available
Oh, great.
on the together with the
Oh,
podcast.
great.
And so there we are. We'll wrap up. This has been a blessing for me, and I'm sure for us listening. And yeah, I can't wait to do something more with you again
Sure,
soon.
anytime.
Wonderful. Thank you so
Well, thank
much,
you,
sir.
Frank.
Thank
You know,
you.
my
Have a
favorite
good one.
relative, my mentor when I was growing up was an uncle named Frank.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So I always
Very
have good
good.
associations with
Oh, very good. Well,
that
that's lucky for me. Wonderful. Okay,
Okay.
blessings and good night ahead to you, and
Okay, thank you.